You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
David Shapiro is the deputy chairman of Sasfin Securities, sometimes in Johannesburg, sometimes in Melrose Arch, but at the moment in Manhattan. I don't know what to say, but happy holidays. How was Yom Kippur for you?
Well, the older you get, the easier it is to fast. So, it was okay. You do these things, and I felt a bit tired last night, but I'm fine.
And there's a massive...
You get to be with family, you know. You get to, the nicest thing about the Jewish holidays here in America is that I get to be with my family here, meet new people.
And there's a massive Jewish community in New York, and it's almost outside of Israel. It's probably the center of the Jewish community.
Yeah, it is. And there's a very, very strong Jewish population. What's very interesting about it is that there are a number of different religions, and I'm not going to go into the whole source of it. Okay. Whereas in South Africa, most of us are Orthodox, or we practice Orthodox. We're not necessarily as observant as, say, Orthodox people would be here. But the biggest movement here is what they call conservative, you know, which is middle of the road, where they're much more liberal. You know, certainly the Orthodox people have got their own ideas about it, but they remain, in a strange way, still very religious in their beliefs. You know, they have women rabbis and people sit together as opposed to normal Orthodoxy, but they're still very pro-Israel. Very, very pro-Israel, and still recognize their Judaism and acknowledge it. But they practice a different kind of Jewish religion, but still, still very, very powerful group here. You get a different things. Yeah, you know, you get kind of different difference. And this reform side is also very, very big. The reform, and that's extremely liberal interpretation of the Jewish religion. But they still go as Jews. So you meet all kinds of people, yeah.
Are you worried about the rise of anti-Semitism in places like Germany, for example, in a small town called Halle in Germany yesterday? Yeah. Some chap who was dressed up in fatigues or a military uniform, he live-streamed his shooting at a synagogue, and then he went to a kebab shop, which presumably wasn't Jewish, but probably Turkish or something like that, and shot dead the proprietor of that place. Yeah. It's quite disturbing, isn't it? I mean, it's only a couple of deaths, and I can say that glibly. It's only a couple of deaths, but it's a movement.
There are many, many actions. I think every day anti-Semitic actions are reported. Particularly the rise in Europe is quite frightening. A year ago to the date, there was an attack on a Chabad shul in Pennsylvania. You know, yesterday was Yom Kippur. It wasn't Yom Kippur last year, but it still was an attack on the highest holiday in the Jewish calendar. So it's quite significant, and the fact that they do it on that holiday is also relevant. So it is a rise, and people have, in fact, our rabbi, the rabbi yesterday said, you know what's different? And this is when he was talking during one of his sermons outside the shul, and this is a little shul in the Upper West Side of New York, which is has a huge Jewish population. You know, that's where there are a lot of Jews that live in that area. There was a security guard. Mm. And he said, you know, this we've never seen. So you had to go into shul and they would search, pat you on the, pat your jacket and see if you're carrying any arms and so on. And that's the difference, that you can't, every synagogue has to have a security guard now. Where there is a congregation. And I think even in Johannesburg, they're certainly much more aware and very conscious of it. So you have organizations that do protect you over these holidays. In fact, protect you on most days where, most of the Sabbath and other holidays as well. So, it's a serious issue.
It really is a serious issue. And I'm not talking about whether particular world leaders, people in authority, and people that other people, the masses, look up to, are responsible for this, whether it be responsible for anti-Islamic, anti-Jewish, anti-British, whatever it is. Yeah. But I do think that people have a responsibility in authority to be conciliatory rather than put out this bombastic rhetoric that they're doing at the moment. And the reason I say that, I'm not going to talk about it because I'll get into trouble. Do you agree with me?
Sure. You know, world leaders can sway opinion. And it's the way that they act and that allows this to happen. So, sure, I, you know, absolutely, I agree with you. Also, I think gun control is extremely important. The fact that you can actually walk into any organized, certainly in America, and buy as many arms as you want, you know, and that's seen as a right. I mean, that just adds to the problems.
Yeah,
so, yeah. I don't know Europe. You know, I don't know in Europe how they get arms and so on. And I think there's a slight base. I think in America, it's the extreme right. You know, it's white supremacist. Whereas in Europe, it probably has a leaning towards, I suppose, also neo-Nazis and sometimes, Islam-based jihad-type-based attacks. We don't know. But it's broad. It's broad. And it's frightening, you know, because there are religious people like to it. And I don't mind if they show their religion. You know, I'm not one who really is concerned whether the Muslims wear headscarves or whether the Jews wear yarmulkes. You know, it doesn't offend me, but it does offend a lot of other people.
It certainly does. And what offends me is the Brexit story at the moment. And I'm not talking about Brexit specifically, but I like to listen to these people that say, oh, we've got to get out of the European Union. We've got to get out of the Eurozone because of these layers of bureaucracy. And I saw a woman on the BBC this morning saying, we are going to ban people eating on the bus, on the tube and on the train because it promotes obesity. And I sort of sat back and I said, wait a second. I agree with people not eating on public transport because I don't like to see people chewing and then throwing away their packaging on the floor of the train or something. But if you're telling me that if you ban somebody eating a donut or a hamburger or a packet of crisps or having a coffee on the tube in the morning, if that's going to solve obesity, then you are absolutely ridiculous because they'll get out of the station and they'll just sit there and have some more. I mean, this is Britain, and they blame the Eurozone on bureaucracy and stupidity. It is unbelievable. Britain is, I'm sorry, it's the country of my birth, but I tell you, it's a complete mess.
That's interesting because just, you know, I catch the train here, catch the tube. And I mean, it's always packed, and I've never seen anyone eating. I don't think you are allowed to eat on the trains, or certainly, I very very seldom see anybody eating there. And I think that might be a self-imposed rule, that to keep the trains clean and that. But I've never seen. But believe me, there are big people in America, whether they eat on trains or
fat
not.
Fat people, you mean?
they big. No, they're big. they're huge. These basketball, you know, that's why you get these kind of basketball players here. I mean, they are massive people here. And look, you get all kinds, but I'm sometimes amazed at the size of some of the Americans here.
You're being kind. You're saying basketball players because they're tall. I'm talking about the obesity in America. People are obese over there, right?
Well, you know, when you sit down for a helping, you've got to learn how to order sandwiches in America. Mm. Never ask for a sandwich. You know, you don't. You ask for a half a sandwich. Now, half a sandwich doesn't mean you only get half. It means that the filling is halved. Okay. In other words, otherwise you get 2 inches of corned beef on a rye. You know, you ask for a corned beef on rye, it's like 2-3 inches thick. You know, so you can't. No one can consume it. So you have to ask for half a sandwich, which they cut it to 1 inch of corned beef. You know, and believe me, there are people that can finish it. So understand. And if you ask when you order there's a place around across the road from us called Smith's. And if you order a steak there or something like that and you ask for fries, you know, chips, I mean, you can feed the entire African continent with what they bring on. So, it's a wonder how much of this is just waste. And if there's no better way to actually control it or whether people really eat it. But I've never seen, you know, portions like that. So that's part of the reason. But then when you run around Central Park and see how many fit people there are, that's the other extreme. But I suppose it's confined to a square mile or a couple of square miles.
So what do you do? For example, you've been out for a couple of meals since you've been there, which has been 2 weeks now. Mm. Where do you go? What do you eat?
You know what we do? The best thing to do, I'd say, and really the healthiest thing to do is, we're just above a Whole Foods. You know, Whole Foods is a couple of meters down the road from us.
Yes.
And I love to go there, and you just buy, you buy salads and you buy vegetables and you buy cold meat or fish. Fish, very good. It's expensive, but it turns out to be significantly lower if you cook your own meals, and also healthier than going and sitting down. But you must, you know what, America is, people come home late. There are a couple of things that it's everything sorted out, and I've got to tell you these things. So my kids have got a dog. His name's Chicago. They have a daycare for dogs. So you go and you leave your dog at daycare.
Yes.
And they look while he's still a puppy, and they look after him throughout the day. And that's even nice. At night, like last night, we only ended about 9:30, 10:30. We went to fetch him. There were still a few dogs, you know. They will even keep him overnight. It's spotless. You know, the place is spotless. It doesn't smell of dogs. He loves it, this little Chicago, because he's got lots of friends to run around and play with and sniff. But I'm saying that's, you know, that's a kind of organization. Everything is within walking distance. The other thing is that most people work till 5 or 6, whatever it is, you know, 6. The hairdressers, the nail places, the shops all remain open till 8, 9, 10 at night.
Okay.
And that, so you don't have to leave work to go and shop. So, you know, you get off the train and you go and do your shopping wherever it is, at Fairways or Whole Foods or various places and that. So the service industry is around your working day. And everything's designed, you know, you take your shirts down to the dry cleaner, they wash and press everything for you, or wash and fold, whatever it is. And in most buildings as well, what's interesting in most buildings is they have a party room, you know, which is a huge room at which you can have parties, so you don't have to have it in your apartment. And that they'll have a gym there as well. So everything's designed for this inner city living. And you know, also what's interesting, Lindsay, is yes, I mean, in our building alone, I don't know, this is 25 stories, so there's, I don't know how many people live here. You never have the electricity going off. You never have water problems. I've never seen a traffic light or robot out of order in this place. I've never seen traffic disruptions. If they are, they quickly sort it out. The cops are there in no time. So there's an energy here, and you know, and the reason is what we discussed the other day. Every position in the city, you vote for it. You know, you don't just get appointed. So
yes.
So if you want to keep your job, you dare not have anything go wrong with the administration of this place and that. So it's very interesting to observe how a city like New York actually operates. And the difference between kind of the inefficiencies that we see at home in South Africa versus, you know, how people operate here.
Before we get to the markets, I need to talk about Donald Trump, because he's a native New Yorker. There's a very, very tragic case of a 19-year-old boy in the United Kingdom by the name of Harry Dunn. He's was a very keen motorbiker. He's not anymore because he's dead. A woman called Sakoulis, her name was Anne Sakoulis, hit the 19-year-old motorcyclist Harry with her Volvo SUV on August the 27th outside a US spy station in Northamptonshire in the United Kingdom after driving on the wrong side of the road for up to 400 yards. Days later, she was spirited away from the UK on a state-sponsored private jet from America's Air Force Base in Suffolk, RAF Mildenhall, protected by her husband's diplomatic immunity. And this is what happened after that. Donald Trump says, those are the opposite roads. That can happen. I won't say it ever happened to me, but it did. When you get used to driving on our system and you're all of a sudden on the other system where you're driving, it happens. You have to be careful. And this woman with diplomatic immunity by association, because she's married, was driving down the wrong side of the road, presumably having lived in England for quite a long time, killed a 19-year-old boy, and Trump says, well, this happens. This is symptomatic.
This is ludicrous. I mean, look, I understand, when I say I understand that, because I still can't cross a road here because I still look the wrong way, you know, and likely to get run over. But why must, you know, that's my fault. I mean, that's my fault for not observing it. I can't be given immunity just because I come from South Africa. But I mean, to not to face charges. I don't think that's why diplomatic immunity was instituted. I think
I don't care about the diplomatic really immunity, unfair. David. Mm-hmm. I care about the way that Trump has treated it and said, you know, these things happen.
Especially if it's a wife of the military, and I mean, because that's somebody on U.S. service in the U.K.
Yeah.
And he should be more so. But I think that's what differentiates him from from other presidents, and that is there's no empathy. He's just I don't think he's suited for the job. He's certainly not suited for those situations. You know, I'm saying you get back to the situation here where I keep telling how divided the city, the country is. You know, it's split with two extremes. There's nothing in the middle. There's no one who feels indifference. And he plays on that, and that's what I can't understand. I've always thought that a president would be there to unify the country and also to unify the country in the world, in world opinion. But he's not doing that. He gets great joy, like anybody, like you're doing business, you know, by annoying your opponent, almost like rugby, like doing the haka in front of the opposition, you know.
Yes.
You get their noses. And I think he enjoys that. I think, you know, he enjoys doing that. And that's not where that's not what a president is. You know? That's not what a president should be. And you don't want to get up the noses of your opposition or of opposing countries. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to destroy them or just, all you do is, you know, I don't think it's his duty to destroy your self-image or someone else's so he can take an advantage of you, you know, or weaken you. I've never thought of a president. You know, when you want to accept a political post, you like a priest or in religion, you've got to know what comes with it, you know, with the job.
The Dow Jones is up currently 230 points to 26,575. Yeah. The S&P is up nearly 1% after a bit of a choppy few days. The mood's pretty good out there on Wall Street.
Well, it goes up and it goes down. I mean, I don't know what's going to come out of a trade deal. A lot of it is around. Look, there's also a bit of optimism for Brexit as well. I seem to think that something might come out of it. I'm not sure.
I hope so.
I'm not sure that that's a market swayer. It might do okay for some of the UK stocks, but I think the Dow is a lot of it is now around whether Trump can do some kind of deal with China. I'm sure they're going to do something, and I'm sure it was arranged well in advance. I don't know what form it's going to take, and then we're on for the next part, you know. So for the meantime, the Dow's somewhere I'm looking at the S&P at 2950 or just under 2950. So we're still we're still away from the high that we reached, I think, at the end of July. But Lindsay, it doesn't seem to be a driving force. I'm a bull. I'm not a bear by nature. I'm not losing my position. But I'm warning my clients and warning, you know, people that deal with me to say, look, I think we're in for a tough year. I think we're in for a year where we're just going to bumble along, short of results surprising us on the upside. You know, that I can't read at the moment. From my point of view, it's going to be okay. The numbers will be okay, and best they'll be in line with the guidance. But I think it's going to be a year of just bumbling along. You know, we're going to get a lot more political issues as we go into the election and so on. So to work out where to put yourself, I think you've got to do a lot, you know, where to place yourself. You've got to do a lot of hard work and do a lot of research and look for those businesses that are almost immune to this kind of noise. I haven't got any great ideas. What I did see yesterday,
yes,
which surprised me, which absolutely surprised me. You know, I went into Bloomingdale's department store, and I was looking down on the ground floor, and I looked at.
Did you buy anything?
I can't afford it. You know, it's just I was in the LVMH. I was waiting for my wife where the Louis Vuitton store is. You know, because you get stores within stores, and beautiful. I mean, there is magnificent merchandise, the shoes and that, and that's where you see. That's where the rich people shop, you know, rich tourists, rich Americans, etc.
Yeah, but wait a second, David, because I can remember last time, I think it was either a year or 2 years ago, you said to me that you would go to these shops and you could buy Cole Haan shoes and you could buy Hugo Boss shirts at a cheaper price than you would in Johannesburg. But now you're saying That's it's the other
luxury.
Way around.
No, this is luxury. I'm talking luxury.
Okay.
This is luxury. You know, these are the $5,000 bags and so on.
Oh, okay.
But I saw LVMH's results, and there was a fear that LVMH, Louis Vuitton, would be affected by the issues in Hong Kong. Not at all. They came out with incredible results. So there's still elements within this economy which are very, very strong. I think luxury remains very strong. It may be because of the inequality of earnings for whatever reason, but you've got to dig out those kind of companies. Coming back to what you said, absolutely right. You know, when clothing here is probably half the price that you can get things in Johannesburg, whether it's cosmetic, anything that's manufactured in, you know, if you look at the sales now, so we're just at the tail end of the summer sales, and also it's Columbus Day on Monday, so they have sales.
Yes.
And relative to Joburg, I mean, things are dirt cheap here. What is interesting is to see how fashions change and what's, you know, gym, what would you call it, active wear is still very popular. And now the kids wear, you see brands like Nike and Adidas, they have an up-brand sneaker. You know, in other words, that common people can't buy. You've got to have a little bit of money.
You mean poor people, not common people.
So Lindsay, you'll find all these makes, all the shoe makes now, and even very well-known brands are coming out with sneakers, you know, sneaker type, but they're upmarket. They've got designs on and whatever it is. And these go anywhere from $500 to $750 to $1,000. Now, you can work that out in rands. So that's become very popular and a big fashion item at the moment. And, you know, low-level footwear for high-class people.
I don't understand how people can spend $3,000-$4,000 on a pair of tackies.
I've got to take my phone around and start capturing all these things, because it's all the big names in that. And so that's become very – there are brands like YE, All White. I think they're all associated to well-known brands and that are very, very popular. Golden Goose or Goose – something, I don't know, something with a goose on. But, you know, and then you've got these ridiculous sneakers with about, you know, with platforms. They got about 3 inches of rubber underneath them that the kids wear. I mean.
David, let's not talk about fashion anymore, because we're going to make fools of ourselves. David, you're coming back next week. Obviously, yeah. You're going to be very keen to see family and friends and the familiar surroundings of Johannesburg and Merrow's Arch. But are you looking forward to coming back, given what you've just had in the last 2 weeks?
It's always nice to be home. You know, I've got family there. I've got a son and 3 grandkids. Mm. And I do Australia as well. But I love traveling, because it just opens your eyes. You know, it just gives you a different perspective of life. And I always come back with the desire to say, to South Africa, you know, we've got to work harder. We just got to work smarter and harder to clean the country up. South Africa is a beautiful country. You know,
really
you've
is.
Been in the Cape, you lived in the Cape, you know what's there.
Yes.
And we make such a mess of it. You know, that's what kills me. And it's not difficult. I'm writing an article, I don't know if I told you, for Julieta.
Yes.
And I'm just recalling for the Financial Mail, I'm just recalling where I was in 1972, where we were. And when I take back my memory to what South Africa was with our gold mines.
1972, the gold mines.
When I started.
They produced 1,100 tons, I think, of gold. I think it was in 1970.
Three world's gold, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So when I look at South Africa at that point, when I joined, and I'm only using 1 year and then fast-forwarding to where we are now, and I look at it, we were not only that, we were leaders in technology. We had a clearing system that was the envy of the world in terms of technology, the JSE. So there were things, and also we were a very appealing destination because of our gold mines and diamond mines. Understand, it's 1972, you know, tech was in its infancy, you know, the only computers were mainframe. And then I fast forward to where we are today, and that's disturbing, you know, to see how we've given all of that up, and you know, the road over those almost 50 years.
Mm.
So we've got to try. I know you don't want to impose those kind of values maybe on people today, but you've got to find a path back into the world.
Let me ask you this final question now, David, because we're digressing here, or I'm digressing. You've got three. Obviously, you're in the autumn of your life, but you've got children and grandchildren. If you had to sit down with the family and say, okay, you've got three choices here. We are familiar with South Africa and we've got a base in South Africa. We're familiar with Australia and we have a presence in Australia. Mm. We love New York and the United States, and particularly New York. We've got to decide where we're going to live as a tribe. If I can put it that way, what of those three geographies would you choose? Which?
Now, that's an interesting situation, because probably Australia would be the best lifestyle. But from a retired point of view, so if I had to retire, it would be the US, simply that living in New York opens up so many opportunities for elderly people. I can garden in Central Park. Yes. I can go to ballet lessons. I can go to art lessons.
Could you say that again? You can go to what?
I'm joking. I mean, I could go to dancing.
I'd love to see you in a tutu, but anyway, that's just me.
No, you don't want to see that. But what I'm trying to say is that they cater for that. And also, it's easy to get around. You know, there's the trains, when you get to my age, everything's cheaper, everything's easier. And from that point of view, I think New York is probably the best city to retire in. Yes, you might need a little bit of finance, which is a problem. But for children, probably the safest area, the best lifestyle, I think is Sydney. You know, and it would be South Africa, save crime. And I think crime is the one thing that is pushing everybody. Just talking to, you know, even talking to my office today, chap who works for me, Craig, said to me, "Oh, do you know what happened to Gail, her husband? They were invaded last night. Her husband shot, he's fighting for his life." You know, those are the kind of incidences that we have to go through all the time in South Africa. There you are, a lady works for me, invaded home, husband shot. For what?
Oh.
So I think that's the difference. You know, that's crime is the one thing that would push us, you know, out of there. And we've had enough incidences in my family to know about it, you know, from my wife and daughter and even myself. So that's, but from a retirement point of view here, you'll never get bored.
No, you won't. David Shapiro, thank you very much for your time. When are you back, over the weekend or what?
Yeah, I'll be back in the office on Wednesday. I start my journey Monday morning.
Okay. David Shapiro is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities, sometimes in Johannesburg, sometimes at Merrill's Arch, but at the moment in New York, and he'll be back with us next week. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com, made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.